Welcome, everyone, to day five of the International Council on English Braille's midterm executive committee meeting. We are in the home stretch, folks, and everybody's been hanging in there very nicely. This has gone extremely well. Thank you so much for coming. Today, we'll have a couple of committee reports, a couple as in three committee reports. In our first part of the session, this may or may not take us to 1 hour and 15 minutes. If it doesn't, we will break when we've finished those reports. And then the last half, we have some kind of housekeeping and reviews and things like that. We'll summarize things. So today could be a bit of a shortened day or not. You never know, depending on how much conversation we get into. So we will start with, does anyone have any housekeeping or questions in on the executive committee side? Anything to bring up before we start? No. All right, I will hand it over to James Bowden, who is the chair of the Music Braille Committee.
Thank you very much, Judy. So the Braille Music Committee of ICEB, it deals with the interaction of the Braille Music Code and UEB and things like that. And a lot of the previous work about ironing out how the Braille Music Code works with UEB has already been sorted. So we're now looking at some various other things. And one of the resolutions passed at the 2024 assembly was to try and work out differences in the way each ICEB country actually lays out, in particular, the Braille music itself. So we've discovered that there are differences, but we don't actually have a reference document detailing what they are. And therefore, if I borrowed a piece of music from Australia or the US or South Africa, there might be things which I'm not familiar with. And conversely, if those countries borrowed a piece of music from the UK, there might be things which you're not familiar with. So we would like to document them. And in the last couple of years, we have made some progress. We've collected some music samples from Australia, Canada, New Zealand, and the UK. And those pieces are hopefully going to be available in what we call Music XML, which is, if you like, if I could use an analogy, the word processor format for music notation, if you like. So hopefully every country is going to translate those pieces into the formats that they use, and then we can study the differences. So the music committee actually met last month since I wrote the report, and we did agree to continue this process of collecting material. And to start with, we'll concentrate just on the source material, if you like, the print files of the scores. And we decided to have them in PDF, which is helpful to sighted people, and Music XML, which is helpful for translation purposes. And each country has offered to submit a particular sample of a different kind of music. So we're not all doing the same thing. So, for example, keyboard music is formatted differently to vocal music, which is formatted differently to, I don't know, guitar music. Exam questions. I've mentioned the word exam once before in connection with the UK report, but exam questions, they could be formatted in all sorts of ways, and that would be helpful to have information on. It's worth noting that the DAISY Music Braille project conducted a similar exercise, collecting formatting samples from countries who use section by section, that's the name of the format, used in many European countries, not all, but many. And as expected, we know about Braille formatting, every country had something slightly different. So, yes, this is a worthwhile exercise to do it for the ICEB countries, and I hope we can progress the resolution in the next couple of years to continue work. I should mention the goal of the DAISY Music Braille project is to ensure that more music Braille scores, my Braille display not moving, are available to more easily to more blind musicians worldwide. That's a great goal. And they've done a lot of work in all sorts of areas. And I would encourage you, if you're interested, you can find out more on the DAISY website, daisy.org. And then there's a link to projects and activities, and look under Music Braille. Another thing that the ICEB Music Committee has been involved with this project, several areas have been identified in the reference work for the Music Code, the new International Manual of Braille Music Notation, otherwise known as NIM. Several areas have been identified where there's either incomplete or information needs to be clarified. And we note that there is the Bummer Music Braille Code publication, which is 20 years roughly more modern than the NIM. But not all countries use the Bummer code, including outside ICEB. We are very conscious that the music code is a global code, not just used in English-speaking countries. And so we're pleased to report that we found someone who is interested to lead a project, kind of make an update, if you like, to NIM in whatever form that takes. And they were there at our meeting last month. It's really encouraging. And we're also hoping to involve many more countries, as many as possible, ideally. And therefore, we've reached out to the DAISY project and also the European Blind Unions. Braille Working Group. Now, there is, of course, the question about who should lead this project, and it has also been mentioned at the World Braille Council, which is great. One thing that I think we can say is we're very encouraged in the development in access to music score notation software and Braille music translation programs. The progress that's been done in the last 10 years, I know we're talking about the last two, but developments continue. And therefore, I can say the developments in the last 10 years have been phenomenal. And these programs are really useful for anybody if you want to compose. In score notation, useful for education, participating in groups and ensembles, choirs, and so on, and so on, and so on, and so on. I know several people in the UK who now use these programs for their own personal projects. So, for example, I know people who they've managed to ask their choir masters, can you give me music XML? So, if the choir master is already using a mainstream score notation program to produce the music copies for the choir, just give the file to the blind chorister, if you like, and they were able to make a Braille copy. Brilliant. Okay, it's not a professional transcribed copy, and we always need transcribers, we know this. It's still an incredibly useful tool to have in the toolbox. So those are the three main things I wanted to say. We'll come back to music later on in the charges, I'm sure. I'd like to finish by thanking, in particular, Geordie Howell for leading the music committee over many years and for all the things that have been accomplished over that time and her insight and guidance. Thank you.
Thank you, James. Does anyone on the executive committee or Geordie or anyone in on the panelist side have any comments, questions, anything? I did hear a hand a while back. Is this...
We did. We had Daphne with the.
Okay. We can take that now.
Okay. Daphne, if you do have any questions, you just unmute yourself.
I'm so sorry. That was an inadvertent hand
Oh,
raising.
all
Yeah.
right.
Yeah,
Oh, thank
Daphne.
you. Hi,
Hi,
Daphne.
everyone. Thank you. Thank you, James. That was very good. Thank you.
We do have a hand. We have Jen.
Okay, Jen.
I just wanted to say one of the things I love about the music committee or the music, not necessarily the committee, I guess, but I just find there's so many neat things going on in other parts of the world, particularly the UK and Australia and New Zealand. And I guess I just feel kind of envious because I think in Canada, I mean, we have music transcribers, we need more, and but I just it's really neat to hear about the things that other countries are doing when it comes to this. And so I just wanted to mention that because to me, I find that as somebody who started taking music lessons, and my mother and my piano teacher did not find no for 4 or 5 years after the fact that there was a music braille code. I just think it's great the way other countries are doing more than my own country happens to be doing. Not a reflection on our rep to the committee at all. Just clarifying that.
Jen, you're absolutely right.
Oops.
Spreading the
Had to lower
word
it.
that there actually is a Braille music code is a really useful thing. And this comes back to the discussions we were having yesterday about promoting Braille generally and busting the myths. I mean, I have to be honest, I get annoyed when people say things like, oh, Braille music's really complicated. My first question is, do you read print music? And if they say no, I say QED, you know. But I think there is work to do on promoting Braille music. It is actually an incredibly useful tool. It's got lots of interesting patterns to it. The underlying code is actually quite simple. And I wonder actually if the difficulty with Braille music isn't the actual code, it's the slog of memorizing 20,000 notes, or however many
Yeah.
there are in a piece, you know.
Can't play and read at the same time.
Yeah, well, you can if it's vocal music,
You can, yes,
and you
or if you're one hand, yeah.
and you can if you've got organ pedal exercises, but use your feet for that.
For the piano players, not so much.
Not so easy, no, not so easy. And I do know from personal experience that some music is so much easier to learn than others. I
I would
was
agree.
reading, I'm going to talk a little bit of jargon here. 3/8 music, you've got nice short bars, three quaver beats in a bar, which is really quite short. And you can quite learn quite a few of them, it's quite easy. But if you have 6/4 in semi-quaver counterpoint or 16th note counterpoint, that's 24 things you've got to learn before you even learn one bar. It's very difficult. So yeah, myth busting, promoting, I'm all for it. And I have to say, I'm really impressed. I join you, Jen. Some of the stuff we hear coming from New Zealand and Australia, I'm envious too. I'd love to have a Braille music camp in the UK, but we haven't managed to do that yet. Maybe we'll descend on Canada. There we go.
There's an idea.
Hey, you are all welcome anytime.
I never understood Braille music until in 2000, I edited a book for NLS called Braille into the Next Millennium. And see, Braille is going to last a long time. And there is a chapter in that book on Braille music written by Harvey Miller. And it is such a wonderful chapter because it's written in plain English for people, and for people who aren't musicians can actually understand how Braille music is organized. And it was really made a lot of sense to me. So if somebody wants to quietly learn a little more about Braille music, that's a good place to do it.
And it's also worth noting there are more courses being developed. We should, of course, mention the UEB online Braille music course,
Yeah, that one's excellent, as we were talking about the other day.
which mentioned yesterday. The RNIB, I think, is about to relaunch. It's not a new thing. It's a course that was made several years ago, in fact, by the previous music officer, music advisor, and it's a 10-lesson course aimed at sighted people. So there's lots of resources, and there are lists available of resources as well. Just getting the word out there.
We do have a hand raised, FM.
Yeah, and I was going to say, actually, I feel that way about the United States too, that I think there's a lot less music instruction going on in schools than there used to be. And I think there's just fewer people who in education who know Braille music. And I feel guilty that I myself give it much shorter shrift than it actually deserves. I have had some students who have learned it fairly well, but most of them don't know print music. They don't know how music works. And I just don't have time in my courses to teach how music works as well as then, how to do. Anyway, so I kind of despair sometimes that we're losing a lot of opportunity to promote Braille music. The other thing I thought perhaps you m might mention, James, is that there have been several times in the last couple of years that we have found out about people recreating a Braille music system, either because they don't know Braille music themselves, or they don't know there is one. Remember, there was a gentleman in, was it Brazil or something, who sent us something about it, and then there was the. So we've had occasions where people reinvent a wheel, not very well, because they don't actually understand that there already is a well-established system.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Thank you. And this has happened for language codes as well, not just music. I guess I should add that there's a this misconception that Braille music is really difficult. Of course, it's easier to hear sound and play it straight back, and many blind people have excellent oral skills. And so to play by ear, particularly at the early stages, is really quite easy. And therefore, why bother learning Braille music? Well, of course, if you're going to be serious about it, you need to know what the composer's written. And you need, therefore, to build those skills before the time when you, whoops, oh dear, I've reached a stage where I can't listen by ear because the music's got far too complicated. So you do need to build those skills, even at the early stages, even if it's just simple stuff. And so I'm all for all these initiatives to promote Braille music, to use Braille music, to see it in action. And it's interesting as well, just like Braille itself is now not just dots on bits of dull buff paper. We have refreshable Braille displays, and of course, Braille music is just dots like anything else, and therefore, Braille displays can also be used for Braille music. And programs like MuseScore, it's a notation, mainstream notation editor, do have some, if you like, live Braille music in them. I should also mention, of course, Goodfeel. Goodfeel was the first, and it's still highly respected and really valuable program. And you know, you can write Braille music in MuseScore. You can use the music editor controls to write music in both Goodfeel and MuseScore, and you can immediately see on the Braille display what you've written. So that kind of really adds to the appeal and interactive score where you can hear it, you can read it, you can write it, you can play it, etc. Really, really good, not just on books.
We have another hand raised. Matthew?
Hello. I think the point has sort of been made already, but I just really just wanted to reiterate that yes, we hear all this about Braille music is complicated, etc., etc. I don't think that this is unique to Braille. I think this also happens in print music. I think it might be different in different countries, but certainly I've heard an increasing amount of rhetoric in the UK amongst sighted people that says that classical music is elitist, and that reading music notation is something that rich kids that go to private school do, and it's not something that applies to the common class. You know, not in so many words, of course, but sometimes in so many words. I've certainly heard it said, "Oh, you don't. Who reads music nowadays other than snobs?" You know, and I do hear that rhetoric, and that's not about Braille music. That's about music. That's about print music. So I think the issues around Braille music and how hard it is, I think it is an important issue. But I think understanding the broader context of music is actually probably going to be quite important in terms of how we overcome that. And certainly, having spent a few months in New Zealand, one of the things I found very interesting is how much more music education there appears to be in the curriculum compared to in the UK. I don't know how many sighted children now are being taught to read notation beyond, you know, jelly on a plate in crotchets or quavers, as the case may be. You know, I don't think there's a great deal of music education going on in UK schools, unless you choose to do it. Whereas I get the impression that a lot more of that is happening in New Zealand schools, and that may be why Australia and New Zealand do better with Braille music, because they might actually be doing better with print music.
Interesting point. I do remember my mother was a teacher, and I do remember the headmistress of that school, a principal of that school, said they wanted every child to have the opportunity. So there were recorder groups and choirs and goodness knows what. So, but I absolutely hear you, Matthew. That might well be more the exception rather than the rule.
We have another hand raised. Mary?
Yes, Mary from New Zealand, rather proudly. One of the things I don't hear enough about is respect for blind musicians and composers, current and the past. Thank you for putting my hand down. Appreciate that. I consider one of my life's real privileges was the ability to go to the Rodrigo Foundation. I was for a while on the DAISY board and it met in Madrid. So I said, I'm going to the Rodrigo Foundation, and off I went. And one of the drivers was a conversation on BBC World Service in 1997, which is almost 2 decades ago. And it was talking about statistics of this, that, and the other thing. And they said the most commonly recorded piece of 20th century music in 1997 was Rodrigo's Guitar Concerto. And I thought, that's amazing. And of course, he's a blind person who roughly sketched his scores in Braille. And I went to the Rodrigo Foundation and met his daughter, who, amongst other things, said to me, my father used to say, I wish I was known for more things than a guitar concerto. And you know, that guitar concerto was played only a couple of weeks ago in the BBC Proms, this year's Proms, and the guitarist's guitar sounded quite different from recordings that I've previously listened to. And this is fascinating. And why don't we recognize that apart from breaking the law and doing dumb things like driving cars, blind people with the skills can do anything if they have the skills and the inherited abilities and that sort of thing. Surely that's a matter of pride for teachers to share with kids and encouragement. And I'm really pleased that there's a lot of reasons why music is well taught in New Zealand schools. And as a little girl, I went to recorder classes on Saturday morning at the local primary school. And one of the reasons is that we've had imports from the UK and elsewhere, and Peter Godfrey is one of the imports, and he's passed away now, but he set up choral singing in New Zealand and was instrumental in getting New Zealand choirs into the international scene. And the development of that singing has and other musical activities has spread right across New Zealand curriculum through lots of very good music teachers.
Thank you. Yes, there are plenty of other blind composers and famous blind musicians. I was actually approached recently, and I forget exactly which university it was. It was in the US, for names of blind organists, organ composers. And we had a list of a good half dozen. You know, ranging from people like John Stanley to Louis Vian and plenty more in between. And that's just organ music. If you go and widen it, you know, to more modern genres of music, you've got jazz, you've got blues, you've got all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
I want to know from Matthew what jelly on a plate is.
It's a
I
tune.
was curious about
Matthew,
that
you're
too.
going to sing it for us.
Well, I don't know that it actually has a tune. I was taught it, and I think I was taught it in quavers, and I was shown it.
Eighth notes, by the way, for the
Yeah.
US.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So I was shown it on swell paper, by a very enterprising music teacher who really was a proper music teacher, not just a classroom teacher who'd been co-opted to do a bit of music because they happened to play guitar in a band, which is, I think, what sometimes happens in UK schools now. But anyway, yeah, she was a proper music teacher, and she knew music, and she knew Braille, and she was a professional accompanist outside of school and all this sort of thing. And she swell papered up, you know, Minolta'd, as we called it, jelly on a plate in quavers to show the quavers joined together. And so I saw jelly on a, it goes jelly on a plate, jelly on a plate, wibble wobble, jelly on a plate. And it's a silly little song, but
You could use it,
that
Matthew,
was.
for the EBU thing.
Yeah, well, yes, indeed. So that was what introduced me to what print me that was what I was shown as, you know, notes with heads and tails and just stems and beams and things. that was the piece of music that introduced me to that in a print context. And then we saw the same thing written out on, I think we just saw it written out on C in Braille music to show what the same thing would look like. I don't think we assigned a tune to it. There might be some floating around. I mean, make one up. It's not that hard, but yeah, that's what jelly on a plate is.
Thank you very
You
much. Sorry, Jen, I jumped in front of you.
No, that
we'll
was well
play it on
worth
that carol on. We'll play
it.
it on that carol on.
Right. Am I
Okay,
good to go?
you are, Jen,
Yes,
yes.
but let's make this one the last comment on this topic.
Okay, really quick. Yes, the guitar concerto by Rodrigo is very good. I think Matthew touched on something that is a huge issue for us in that there are so many areas of education that are underfunded for everybody. And so then that, I mean, we'd have our challenges anyway, but that makes it even harder for us, I think, when the print students, the sighted students aren't getting the instructions they should be getting, it's going to be even more so for the Braille readers. And then the only other thing I wanted to say, and I don't want to embarrass you, but I have heard several things that James has composed. And James, you really are extremely talented. And I know maybe not everybody here knows it. So we have our own composer that we can celebrate. So there you go. I'm sorry, James, if I have embarrassed
That's
you,
some
but
very kind
I
of you,
thought
Jen.
people should
Thank you.
know.
Well, I have finished the sonata now.
Wonderful. I'm looking forward to hearing the whole thing because the first part was fantastic.
Fierce. Yes, the full story of why I wrote it is not for this meeting.
That's all fine. I just wanted people to
Bad.
know.
Yeah. And you'll be pleased to know that I did use the programs such as MuseScore to write out the print score of the program, and then I used the Saumai Braille converter to make the Braille score. So yes, these programs are useful even personally.
All right. Thank you very much, James. And this has been a very interesting discussion. And we need to move on to has Willow Free appeared in the attendees
I do
group?
not see Willow.
Okay. Then we'll ask James to present the Braille Technology Committee report, please.
Let me just find the right file. Here we go. So, if someone wants to take notes while I'm talking here, because I haven't prepared this quite so
I can do
much.
it, James.
Bless you, Jen. Thank you.
I've got the
Get my
to-do
own
list
back
going anyway,
for
so.
embarrassing me.
There you go.
No,
I'm
it's
well and duly
fine.
punished.
No. It's all friendly.
Just
It's all
kidding.
friendly.
It's all good.
Right. So, I'm hoping this is not going to be too negative. But there are some things which I have to say in this report, which are not quite as positive as the last one. So we'll see where we go. And of course, do take into account, we've mentioned some of this already. So, two resolutions were passed in 2024 to do with Braille technology. One is to do with full implementation of the technical side of UEB in Braille technology and software. And the other one was Resolution 2 about back translation. Now, I have to say, screen reader technology has moved on quite a lot since this resolution was passed, and some of the specific issues, not all, but some of the specific issues with specific products are now moot because they have hopefully come on a long way. However, there are still a variety of reasons why everything is not as it should be. And this includes things like the Braille engines that the screen readers and other software rely on are not necessarily always able to handle the subtleties of the codes. And also, some of the technology is really based on text. So if you ask it to do maths, it can't do it because you cannot represent full structured maths in purely text. And well, you can, but it comes out as coded. And that's probably not what people want to see. So the Braille Technology Committee ha wrote to manufacturers in 2021 about various issues, most specifically keeping things up to date. And that campaign was actually quite successful. And we plan to write again with various issues from the 2024 resolutions. But part of the difficulty is making the letter in such a way that the manufacturers can actually do something concrete and specific to actually address the issues. So we can't really say, oh, your software doesn't do such and such, and by the way, you can't fix this in because of the engine that you're using. That's not helpful. So we do want to try and make the letter positive. There is a draft ready to be sent, except I think from the discussions we had on day one, there are a couple of extra points that could be usefully added. So it is true, we have also passed on some of these issues to the relevant bug tracking systems in various places, and that's about as much as we can immediately do, if you like. It's now over to the manufacturers of the engine to try and fix them, but it's not obvious how that might be done. So, with respect to all these, I believe at present, with current technology, so there's a lot of caveats there, that these resolutions may not be fully resolvable. That's the negative bit. So, moving on to LibLouis, which we've had quite a lot of dealings with LibLouis over the years. There have still been some useful updates, which is good, and it's very encouraging to see that screen readers, by and large, are now on track, updating regularly, which is great. However, as I talked about the tools, LibLouis is one of them. It is not clear how some of the errors, particularly in the braille to print direction, can be fixed. So, for example, the rules for, I don't know, the CC contraction. It's quite clear that the rule is correct. Mid-word, CC dots 2.5. It's fairly clear that's correct, but it doesn't work in the print braille to print direction particularly well, and that's the root problem of one we mentioned a few days ago, HTTPS colon slash slash, because it thinks that the CC, well, there's an S before it, yeah, there's another braille character which is in the space, yeah, it's in the middle of a word, yeah, sure, so HTTPS CC, no, wrong answer. It's not clear how to fix it. Now, we have had a couple of committee meetings in the Braille Technology Group, and there have been a couple of interesting suggestions relating to LibLouis which have been made. The first proposal was to create an extended UEB table for use by screen readers, and the idea was if you received an email and the person writing had their name in Cyrillic characters or Hebrew characters or Arabic characters, that you would get some kind of reasonable representation of their name rather than a whole bunch of numbers, character numbers, or just full cells, which, quite frankly, isn't very helpful apart from knowing the number of characters. So that was a it's a good proposal. Unfortunately, there was only one person who nominated some useful scripts, and nobody else really contributed. So that project is slightly on hold, but it is definitely doable. It's also worth noting that one screen reader in particular already kind of does this. They have their own version of the UEB LibLouis table plus their own extensions. So it is adding extra characters which are not strictly in the remit of UEB. And the second proposal, which is actually a lot harder, I think, was to create learning tables, or if you like, partially contracted tables for UEB, for LibLouis. So those of you who are familiar with the Duxbury Braille translator, you know that there are learning tables that you can apply, and then you can produce Braille which only has certain numbers of contractions depending on what Braille teaching scheme being used. And these can be very helpful to people learning Braille. So to do that in LibLouis, it is again possible, but it would require quite a lot of work because we'd have to split the one file which contains all the contractions into several files which contain some of the contractions each, and then only use the relevant bits of the table. And of course, there's lots of different teaching schemes out there across the globe, and they all introduce Braille and symbols in a different order. So the first real challenge is to work out which scheme or schemes would be needed. So it is challenging. It has been suggested, and sadly, no further work has happened on that one. So again, lots of interesting projects, but sadly, they've got stuck in weeds. That also worth noting about learning tables, there is a school of thought that sometimes they can be unhelpful if misused. So some of you may know that certain Braille teaching schemes are actually written fully contracted all the way through. And the way they do that is they only use vocabulary which includes the contractions that have been learnt so far. So it's a different way of solving the same problem. If you have only learnt a certain number of contractions, you can either restrict the vocabulary or you can end up with words which are partially contracted. Take the word through. I don't know how many different ways there are of writing through partially contracted. It's and then you could have to relearn the shape of that word several times as you learn different Braille contractions. And of course, it's not complete until you've actually learned the dot five sign. So there we go. That's Libluwie. And finally, eBraille. So we are delighted as the Braille Technology Committee that eBraille has become a new standard file format for Braille documents. And I heard yesterday that Duxbury Braille Translator version 15.1 does actually have eBraille export functions. So that's something to look forward to playing with, certainly. I'll be looking forward to playing with that. The first version of eBraille standard was published in last year, and Braille display device manufacturers are beginning to implement it. I know the HumanWare products have an implementation, including the Monarch and the Brailliant. The first eBraille demonstration was from the one on the Monarch, yeah. So work continues on eBraille. So creating exemplars of how best to do the various things. Number of files will be produced on that. Work is ongoing. And it's important, of course, that publishing houses, not just manufacturers and software developers, but publishing houses also adopt this. And there's a lot of work to actually promote it. What does eBraille give us that we don't have already? And I'm sure I've bored everybody. Well, you may remember Willow gave a talk at the 2024 General Assembly. MUG-C was her acronym. My acronym is RING, Reflowable International Navigation and Graphics.
James, we have a hand from Judy.
James,
That's it.
thank you. If there were to be learning tables included in LibLouis, who would do them?
That is a very good question.
That's a lot of work. All right.
We have
Matthew?
another hand.
That's a very good question, Judy.
It is a very good
And I
question.
think, but I think it's a question that ICEB needs to seriously put some thought into, actually, not just about learning tables, but about a lot of this sort of stuff, actually. The Braille authorities who form ICEB have long existed on a model of volunteers bring their time to the table, or an organization says, look, we value the Braille Authority, and so we are going to donate somebody's time. So not to pick on you, James, but that's how James is here, because RNIB very generously says James Bowden is allowed to be chair of this committee because it furthers the international aim, but it also furthers RNIB's aim. And that's how Braille authorities have existed for decades. And up until now, it's worked fairly well, and it's allowed committees like the Code Maintenance Committee to run with very little funding, because it's just understood that somebody will have enough time to chair it and everybody else will do it because that's how it's always worked. I don't think technology works in the same way at all. I don't know many people who would volunteer on a technology project, or at least not for very long, or at least not very consistently. Even if you look at something like NVDA, which is free and open source, it has a charitable foundation. It started off as a voluntary project, but it has a charitable foundation behind it that can get money from people, and it employs people to keep the work up. And I think I've sort of hinted at it throughout the week, but I think if ICEB is serious about getting some of these technology issues sorted out, I think now that we are a 501c3 in the US, I think realistically, it probably needs to raise some money. And what that looks like, I don't quite know. But maybe it starts off as a research project. Maybe we raise some money to employ somebody who we know, or at least who is visually impaired and who knows a lot about technology, to actually talk to the people and say, look, we know that there are problems with screen readers not doing XYZ. We'd like to talk to you, and we'd like to find out more about what those problems are. And from your point of view, why haven't you solved them on the one hand, but also what more can organizations like ICEB do on the other? And the outcome of that may very well be just a research report, but then that would be a research report to influence the next round of funding that says, look, we asked all the screen reader manufacturers, and they said they'd be delighted to help, but they need this, and this might be help with the LibLUI engine. This might be a clarification of a rule. This might be a separate guidance document for screen reader. You know, we don't know what that's going to be because we haven't asked the question yet. But I think if we're going to get anywhere with this, I think we need to put more than just people behind it. I really do think we're probably going to need to put some money behind it, or somebody's going to need to put some money behind it. And one of the outcomes of that may be actually, yes, we'd like to do learning tables, but we need somebody to write them, and then that would be a funding proposal to get to pay somebody to write them.
We have a hand from Jen.
I
Thank
do
you,
agree with Matthew on that point. I also wanted to quickly just bring something to everyone's attention that I had let James and Judy know about, and James asked me to bring it up now. That Robert Engelbretson wrote to me, and as we published the updated the IPA documents 2025, and we so there's an issue with on Mac OS X. There's no LibLUI IPA table. There is on iOS, but there isn't on Mac OS X. So anybody who's using a Mac, if you're in linguistics and you're trying to get IPA Braille or even speech output, you can't do it on a Mac. And so I'm certainly not thinking we're going to solve this right now, but I just wanted to bring it to the attention of the executive and the technology committee, because there's a couple of things that come to mind. I mean, it would be ideal if you could add a LibLUI table that already existed to Mac, if you knew how to do it or whatever, like that you could do that. But Apple, the way Apple is structured, doesn't allow it. So I don't know if this would involve, I don't know if we would talk about contacting Apple, what would happen. I just wanted to bring that to everyone's attention because, we've just recently published this document and we can't meet the needs of everyone, but it does seem to me that this is, a problem for sure.
We have a hand
thank
raised
you,
from
Jen.
FM.
Okay, this one didn't know if you were going to say something else, James.
Oh, sorry, no, I'm
No,
done.
I was going to say thank you. I think it will be a case of contacting Apple, but thank you so much for raising it. Yes.
Okay. three things. Let's see if I
Oh,
can
boy.
remember. I know. Let's see if I can remember them. One was, and Jen, I wondered if you were going to mention this, how Bana has that test document. That's not what we call it.
Oh, yes.
Website. Yeah. And wondering, I've been wondering this actually for a while, like what happens with that? So we've identified that ANCE doesn't come out in the name Francis in this particular situation or whatever it is, just because that happened earlier today. Then who brings these kinds of things besides James talking to the Lib-Lewy people? How what is the role of ICEB in fixing these kinds of things or bringing attention to them? Which brings me to kind of my second thing that we ended yesterday talking about, the difference between advocacy and promotion and position papers, because Matthew just mentioned something about maybe we need to have some position papers about something. Is that something, is that within ICEB's purview? Is that part of what we can do? So those two things are kind of connected. And then I also wanted to go on record that I'm not a fan of learning schemes for children. And perhaps they're useful for adults, but personally, I think children need to see the final form of words and not learn the word mother three different ways.
I agree.
So I don't think they're a big priority necessarily, unless they would be helpful for adult learners, and then I don't know how you do that. But I know that for a long time, Duxbury used to have something that went along with the patterns program from APH or something. I don't even know if they still do because patterns is different now. But I don't encourage my teachers to do partially contracted braille for children. Okay, that was kind of not related to the first two things.
Just writing still. So, number one, about who does the fixes, we are actually very fortunate at present, especially for Lib-Lewy and Duxbury. We have good contacts with Duxbury. I'm just writing still. And there are two of us in ICEB, at least two of us in ICEB, who have good knowledge of the Lib-Lewy tables and have actively contributed to those fixes.
James, I'm writing for you, so you don't have to.
Oh, okay. That's cool. Thank you,
That's
Jen.
what I thought you wanted me to do. So I
Yeah, I
am.
did. I thought you'd stop when I finished presenting.
No, I didn't write as much then because you were going from your report.
Yeah.
But
Oh,
I
that's very
can. I
kind.
will,
Bless
yeah.
you. Yes.
A little
So
bit
we
up
have
after.
we okay, I'll stop. I can mark. Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we have at least two people in ICEB who can do Lib-Lewy table work. And some has actually been submitted in the last week or so. Optimizing, I think, is the right word, the UEB tables. And that would be highly useful to one manufacturer in particular who's got limited memory in their devices. So it'll help. And it actually makes room for some of those wonderful extra symbols we might be inventing soon, assigning soon. On your second point, I don't really have an answer to that. That's more for the PR committee, perhaps, to work out what are we going to do about advocacy, position papers, etc. But on your third point, I also agree. I don't like the learning schemes per se because of these problems of having partially contracted words, and then you have to relearn the word when you've got all the contractions. The counter argument is that there aren't enough Braille resources. There aren't enough Braille teaching resources. You've got maybe, I don't know, a half dozen reading books, and they're all less than 1,000 words. That's not what the child wants to read. They want to read Harry Potter or Gruffalo or whatever else, popular books everybody else is reading. They don't want, I remember Mandy White saying, "Bertha going to the cobblers." It's a, of course, that's just antiquated. And of course, I'm not saying all the Braille reading schemes are antiquated. Of course, I'm not saying that. But there is limited resource of, if you like, bespoke Braille learning material. So I can see it both ways.
We can have an off.
No, I'm not a fan. I'll be honest, I'm not a fan with you. I'm with you. I'm with you, FM. I'm not a fan myself either, but they are used.
But I think as far as technology is concerned, and I see Matthew has his hand up, so let me just say this. This summer, just a couple of weeks ago, when I was at the AER conference, and I was looking at the APH, what the heck is that thing called? The APH doodad, not the Braille Bloom, that's the Perkins one.
The
It's
Monarch.
the Page Connect, the Page
Oh,
Connect.
the Page Connect.
And then the Lotus also, which is going to be coming out soon, that again, the student could put in, Mother was the example that I used to show the APH people why this is a problem, that somebody has to know Braille, and that if the child spells mother with THE or then with a TH or an ER, and also does it with the correct contraction, in print it will show up as mother each way, and the classroom teacher who doesn't know Braille will not know if the child is actually spelling it, writing it in Braille correctly. And those kinds of things really concern me, especially when people are saying, oh, well, we don't have enough teachers, so I guess we'll just use this technology thing. Well, maybe the technology thing is reinforcing incorrect writing and spelling, and I'll shut up and
It's
let Matthew talk.
an interesting question, that one, and it's not just, if you like, newer products like the Page Connect, Perkins Bloom, etc. It's not just them. I remember, must be a couple of years ago at least, someone was asking about the HumanWare Braille Notes, very popular in the UK in education settings. Exactly that question. How do I find out if my student is using the correct Braille signs? And the answer was, make them write a Braille file. Don't make them write a print file. Use the Braille editor rather than the print editor, and then you can see exactly what they've written. And in fact, if you don't know Braille, then you need, if and you're in a teaching situation, you need to learn Braille for that kind of question. If you want to make sure the Braille's correct, of course you've got to learn Braille. It's obvious. If you want to know if you're writing the letter E in print correctly, then you need to know how to write it yourself. It's obvious.
We have a hand from Matthew.
Hello. I agree with all of this about being able to braille the word mother three different ways, maybe even four different ways if you count grade one in all of that. And yes, I also raised this concern when the Braille Note Touch first came out. And I don't think we have a satisfactory answer. And I think more needs to be done on that. Bringing the conversation back round to your first, well, just to very briefly take at your second point, FM, about position papers and things. I think I don't know that we can necessarily create ICEB policy about this without knowing the sorts of documents that people want to write. And so I would almost kind of do this the opposite way around. If the Braille Technology Committee decided they wanted to write a document, then come to the executive and say, we'd like to write a document. And then the executive can decide, A, whether that document is in scope, and B, why it's in scope, so that we don't have to ask the same question again. Otherwise, we end up having discussions about what documents are in scope, and then no document of that type ever makes it. But the more substantive thing I wanted to raise was your first point about whose responsibility is it to put fixes in? And I think this is actually quite a delicate question, because, again, I've mentioned funding before. I think the other angle of funding is that so much of technology is commercial in a way that Braille is not. And with commercial comes commercial sensitivity and non-disclosure agreements and things like that. In the role that I have, and there are one or two other people in ICEB I know who have similar roles, I know who people are. And I have some idea of what sort of non-disclosure agreements they might be under. So I can't actually tell you who the people are or what the people are doing. I don't think it's my business to do that. But I know that they're there and I know that they can do it. And so I think probably there are people within ICEB who have better connections to the technology industry than ICEB has at the moment, and they might be able to use those connections to get ICEB as an organization a better connection. But I think to start with, probably the way that we need to deal with this is to again have a look at the role of observers on the Braille Technology Committee and possibly even have a look at the role of country reps, but that may be a step too far. But I think the role of observer on the Braille Technology Committee probably needs to be a little bit more liberal than the role of observer on other committees, because then if we know that somebody has a non-disclosure agreement with a particular company and might be able to bring some influence to bear, we can invite them as an observer without telling everybody else why, and then they will know what's going on, and then we can ask them to help us out, and that may be a way in the short term to get ICEB a little bit more influence without directly getting the influence.
Yes, I take your point, and I think we already kind of informally have something of that kind of thing. So when the technology committee sent the letter back in 2021, we asked people to send to organizations they already had good relations with. We didn't actually need to know who their contact was or if they were under any, NDAs or anything. But if you know somebody at, Freedom, or if you know anybody at Humanware, or if you know anybody at Dolphin, or whoever it was, we could get that person in the committee, observer or country rep, doesn't matter, and then they report back. But in this particular case of fixing Braille rules and Braille engines, we must also remember that most companies do not write their own Braille translation engine. Most companies outsource to a third-party library, most commonly Duxbury and LibLouis in the English-speaking world. There are others, but those are the most two common ones. We know that one of those engines does really pretty well. And one of them has got problems that need fixing. And LibLouis is an open source voluntary project. So how do you fix it? It's a difficult question to square.
We're going to need to bring this discussion to a close. Is there anyone else with any comments or? All right. This has also been a very, very good discussion. I think we have our work cut out for us for the next many years. All right. Thank you, James, and thank you to everyone who participated in that conversation. Now I'd like to introduce Natalie Martiniello, who is the chair of the ICEB Research Committee.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right. Hello again. I am not sure who else is here beyond the executives. So, for those of you who don't know me, I'm Natalie Martiniello. I'm the chair of the research committee. So, what I'll do, I don't expect that my report will be as long, but we never know where discussions go. So, I guess we will see. But I will just highlight some of the items that you can find in the full report. And if you have any questions, you can just let me know. The research committee was established in 2016 which means that we've now been in existence for 10 years, so time really does fly. The main purpose for the research committee is really to share relevant research about Braille and to continue functioning or serving as a forum for people who are engaged in Braille research across the kind of ICEB membership community. And I'll talk a little bit about how we do that now and how we can continue to think about doing that in future as well. So we, like the other committees, have representatives from the different ICEB member countries as well as observers. And one of the things that I would like to do after the midterm is just check in with each of those country representatives to see if the information is up to date, also if you are all still available to continue in this role, and to also see if there's information that maybe I'm not aware of or that others are not aware of about interesting things happening in your country related to research. So we all know this here today, but I think it's important, it bears saying again that research really does have an impact on how we use Braille, how we access Braille, how we teach Braille. Sometimes it can feel very removed, if you aren't in the research world, and that's something that I think about a lot. And when we do research well, it can have a really positive impact. And I think a really good example of that is, for example, the presentation we heard the other day from Michelle and Jennifer, on Braille and access technology in the workplace. That gives us more recent data about who's using Braille and but also how Braille is being used in the workplace. And so data, you know, findings like that, I think could be very helpful when we're talking to others in our Braille authorities, other members, people who reach out to us who have questions that we can point them to. So not just what we are each saying, which is also really important, but we can actually point them to something that's been published. And a really, really great example of this going forward that I'm really excited to continue sharing information about. Is of course the Global Braille Literacy Campaign, which will answer a lot of questions we're all really interested in knowing more about. That can and will be very helpful, not only from a research perspective, but for Braille promotion as well. So I mentioned that we share information through our listserv, as well as through the ICEB newsletter. And in addition to, I shared some of the articles that have been kind of circulated over the past 2 years. It's not a full list. But in addition to published research, we also can use the listserv to share information about relevant conferences. So, for example, since the last General Assembly, I've shared information and others as well about Braille related conferences, but I've also shared information about conferences that are not directly related to Braille literacy. And I think that's really important for us to continue thinking about. I'm not the only one who's doing this, but for us to continue thinking about, you know, who are we not speaking to? Because we all know that Braille is important. But where else can we be sharing for those of us, you know, who are engaged in Braille research? Who else should we be sharing this with? So one example of this is the International Low Vision Rehabilitation Conference that happens every 2 years. The next one will be in 2028. And usually I'm one of, I don't want to say I'm the only because it's a big conference, but I'm usually one of the only ones who's presenting about Braille because it's a low vision conference. And so the it's example, and it shouldn't be that way because we know that many people with low vision also use Braille. So I think One of the things I will continue doing as the chair, and that I hope others will continue doing as well, is sharing information about conferences that are relevant, but maybe not only directly related to our field, where this might be important for us to maybe have a bit of a presence. In addition to conferences, what I mentioned the other day is that one of the main projects for the ICEB Research Committee, but also other executive members and ICEB members, is the resolution on the Wikipedia articles, resolution 4, that I presented the other day. So this is, just to give a very brief summary of that work, this is the resolution where we are reviewing articles, Wikipedia entries about Braille for accuracy and for clarity, and updating them where needed. And as I mentioned the other day, Wikipedia is not a research source, but we also recognize that that's where many people in the public do get their information about Braille when they do a search about Braille. So it's really important for us to at least look at kind of what the status is for some of those more frequently searched entries are. So that continues to be a priority because we'd like to get that work done. And now we have one more entry to look at, which is the slate and stylus. So that will be the priority going forward until the end of the cal this calendar year, so that we can get that done and share an update. The other main item that the research committee has worked on is the compilation of the adult Braille learning resources that's on the ICEB website. And this too was a collaboration. Many members from ICEB have shared resources with me that I put together into this document. And I mention it here because if you do have other resources you'd like us to add, you could always reach out to me, and I can continue updating that. Once we have, a couple. So we've also been contributing an update to the ICEB newsletter, a research committee update, which we will continue to do it in future. One of the things that I've been thinking about for these future updates kind of touches on what I said a few minutes ago, which is, how can we better strengthen that connection with non-researchers that are doing a lot of important work around Braille? And that overlaps a lot because even those of us who do research may be Braille readers or teachers or transcribers. And so one of the things that I will strive to do in the future, but that I will also invite perhaps others to contribute as well, who are on the ICB research committee, are kind of more user-friendly summaries of interesting research that's been published, or that already exists and has existed for a long time that maybe people don't know about. So, for the next newsletter entry, for example, I'm thinking about, is there an article that I may like to really highlight and provide a user-friendly kind of summary of what did they do, what did they find out, and why might it matter, as well as the link to the full article. So this might be a way to strengthen that connection with other committees if that information is helpful, but also to just be able to share it with others. So going forward, the research committee continues to be a place where we can share information related to articles that are published, conferences, and some of these other, resources that I've mentioned. I do encourage, for those of you who are on the ICEB research committee to use that listserv as a really helpful resource when you have, information about relevant Braille studies you'd like us to know about. And also, if you, I've also, I'll conclude here, but I've also been thinking lately about the next generation of Braille researchers, and that's been on my heart and mind a lot. And if you have graduate students who are doing really amazing work that's relevant to Braille research, they may be interested in becoming observers as well. So with that, I will conclude this report, but I am happy to chat more about any of this and to answer any questions. Thank
All
you.
right, let's take questions from the executive committee first.
We have a hand from James.
Natalie, you've just
Yes.
triggered my mind. Wikipedia, is there a page on Braille music? Did we review it?
Yes, it is one of the ones that has not been reviewed yet, but it is on our list.
Wonderful. Thank you.
I
And it will,
actually reviewed
yeah.
it.
Oh, is it the one that, okay. Then you forget what I said, James. That is one that we've done.
It is one we've done. Okay,
Don't
wonderful.
forget everything she said. She said a lot of really good things.
Yeah, I know it's on our list,
Yes, I
but
did.
forgot that it was one that's completed. That would not have been one that I completed because I am not a musician.
Yeah, I have not read it myself, so I don't know what it said. That's why I asked. Thank you.
No problem.
Anything else? All right, let's open the floor to the observers and attendees who may ask questions at this time about any of the three reports that have been presented in this session. All right, hearing nothing, I think we will now then take a break after our first session. It is
Distorted clock face.
5 something, 11:21 something,
5:17 p.m.
5:17. Okay, let's take a 13-minute break and return at 21:30.